We are the first and probably last culture in the history of the species not to know where our food comes from, where our drinking water comes from, where your poop goes when you flush. Most urban dwellers have no idea where any of those happen. And if you went back in time, even 100 years, and told people that their descendants would not know these basic facts, it would be incomprehensible. And as the temporary era of fossil fuels go away, our descendants, if any, are not going to have that illusion either. We are so distracted by the consumer bounty that most people don't think about where all this stuff comes from. I highly recommend the Disney Pixar movie WALL-E as a great parable about people being distracted by consumerism to the point they don't realize they lost their own planet. I'm convinced at this point that greenwashing is at least as much a part of a problem as denying ecological problems. It's aimed at different audiences. There's a constituency for denying that there's any environmental problems altogether, and it's all just made up nonsense to get government control over red-blooded Americans, or red-blooded Canadians for that matter. And the greenwashing works to put a green veneer on products that might be slightly better, but in many cases, you know, in the Northwest, we have green certification for clear cuts. We have green highways. We have putting up renewable energy systems that are really incinerators. In Oregon, we're giving tax breaks and subsidies to companies building incinerators and calling it renewable energy when there's nothing renewable about it. And this is the Democrats doing this, not the Republicans. So maybe one of the most productive ways of shifting the consciousness is the more people know where their stuff comes from and learn to at least provide a small amount of their own food and other supplies. I think permaculture needs to transcend the consumer-based culture, because permaculture is not about 50 ways to shop for a better planet. It's about creating, producing food. It's not about picking which brand of cornflakes is the ecological one in the grocery store. It's about figuring out how to grow corn and process it and store it for the wintertime, to dumb down the description considerably. And permaculture ultimately is a design system that's not just about food. You can apply it to energy, you can apply it to transportation, you can apply it to the way nations function, you can apply it to the way your household functions, you can apply it to the way the planet is structured in terms of the economy and the energy system. For it to reach large-scale acceptance, not only would you need an enormous amount of education at every level about where food comes from, where your energy comes from, how much energy there is to use, and it's time to learn what works and what doesn't work, and expand by many orders of magnitude. We have communication systems that can share this knowledge all over the world, cross cultures, cross languages, and we need to rapidly do this as much as possible. And this is being forced by peak oil, peak coal and natural gas, peak minerals, peak everything. So we have more resources now than we've ever had or will ever have again. And it's not just the physical resources of the fossil fuels and the minerals, it's also the technologies, it's the communication systems, and all the other things that we have learned through 150 years of the industrial era, the scientific revolution, modern communications, all sorts of knowledge bases from the traditional to the advanced PhD and everything in between. Unfortunately, we're still stuck in this mindset of competition and warfare and the military-industrial complex, which is counter to the survival of the species. We have an enormous industry for taking care of lawns, which are not very edible. And lawns come from Europe, where to have a large lawn manicured showed that you were incredibly wealthy. You were so rich, you did not have to grow food around your house. It was a sign of the aristocracy. And now it's a middle-class practice. And people don't even think twice about it. The energy we dedicate towards lawns is energy we could dedicate toward food. And this is starting to shift in the U.S. in the last couple of years. The garden industry has had record years of people being interested in growing some food. Certainly not everybody, but a fresh tomato from your garden tastes a lot better than one that was grown 2 months ago in Florida and preserved and shipped across time zones. Those are not very tasty. And that's not a political opinion. Pretty much everybody will agree with that. But the fast food industry is orders of magnitude bigger than the permaculture world. And it's starting to shift. But at the rate things are going, the oil will be gone before we make the shift completely. And to relocalize food production, to prepare for a lower energy standard of living, one that is not based on collapse but on cooperation, we will need some fossil fuel to do that. So we should use the rest of the fossil fuel wisely to facilitate that relocalization, rather than burn it all up on more highways and Walmarts and McDonald's. To prevent the problem is impossible. It's too late for that. To mitigate the problem, there's a lot of things we could do. There was a report the U.S. Department of Energy produced in 2005 called the Hirsch Report, for the author of the report. There was an estimate of what it would take to mitigate the impact economically of peak oil. And he estimated it would take 20 years minimum of aggressive preparation, and he supported using some toxic technologies that we would not approve of, such as coal to liquids and tar sands and the rest. But even if you use those toxic technologies, we would have to prepare for peak 20 years in advance of the peak. And we didn't do that. So now we're starting to get into the economic impact of the end of growth. But even though we're not going to be able to prevent the problem, there's an enormous amount we could do to mitigate it. 30 years ago, we had a president who warned us about the energy crisis and said we had to be more efficient, Jimmy Carter. And he was rejected by most of the society because people didn't want to hear the message. And there were some flaws in the way that he delivered it, which we could discuss some other time. But the bottom line is, he said, the energy crisis is going to be permanent. We have to be more efficient. And that didn't happen. You could go back 50 years. President Kennedy tried to call off the Cold War and end the arms race and convert the military-industrial complex for a more peaceful approach. And that, of course, didn't happen. We could have a discussion about that, too. So we've had many steps along the way. This is also the 50th year of the book Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, which warned about toxic chemicals. And very little has changed about toxic chemicals since 1962, except we produce a lot more of them now than we did then. There's more consciousness about organic farming and least toxic practices, but it's a sideshow. I don't know of any country in the world that has really made a serious effort to phase out these poisons. But I think to be effective at slowing down or mitigating the slow motion crash that's underway, the scale of it would have to be system-wide. As a tiny percent of the population, I don't think it would have much impact at all. It's still mostly at the individual household level. And that's certainly good. I don't want to discourage people from tending to their gardens and becoming better food growers and other tactics to reduce your impact. But to really be effective, it's going to have to be a system-wide shift. Neighborhood, city, bioregion. Cooperation is our survival trait as a species. Because human beings, our ability to survive is based on our cooperative abilities to share food. If we're going to survive the global mess we have made, it's going to require that we tap into that cooperative ability between neighbors, between people in a region, between countries all over the world. If Canada handles this well and the United States doesn't, how is Canada going to fare? If North America handles it well and China doesn't, we're going to have a war. We're all interconnected. That's the positive lesson of globalization. It's all one planet, and we have a global economy that is incredibly interlinked. And yes, we need to relocalize everywhere, but we're all interdependent, not just for physical resources, but for every other way. And the safety of regions is going to be dependent on all the other regions handling it well. One of the most significant, if not the most significant event of the 20th century was seeing the Earth floating in space. Maybe even more significant than realizing the Earth was a sphere and not the back of a turtle shell. And seeing it floating in space, which we've become sort of blasé about, you don't see national boundaries, and you see that the biosphere is just a thin film, only a few kilometers thick, where life can be supported. And whatever we all do has to happen in that narrow film. And once upon a time, we thought the Earth was flat. Then we thought the Earth was round, but now we know better. It's constantly getting bigger. And that's the paradigm that the growth model is based on. We have now collided with the limits to endless growth on a finite planet, and this is the root cause of the financial crash that we are experiencing. And now that things are not working well, there's a lot of head scratching. What is the reason for it? Is it just corporate greed? Is it the liberals don't know how to run things? Is it the 1%? Is it the 47%? And the truth is, we have maxed out the abilities of the planet to keep growing. We have tremendous resources, but we can't keep expanding them. And the promise of permaculture design is we can more efficiently have the different parts of the economy work to support each other rather than destroy each other, which is a oversimplification, but we know how to grow food without destroying soil. We know how to harvest renewable energy without destroying the ice caps and causing cancer. But there's a limit to what it will produce. I like to grow green beans in my garden. I put a green bean in the ground and I get a beautiful green bean plant that's full of green beans, but I don't get an infinite number of green beans. And on a larger scale, this is mimicked in the economy. We have a monetary system that's based on compound interest and endless growth. A different model, a more permaculture approach to economics, would be a steady state economy. And a steady state economy is where the economy is a fixed size. It does not keep getting bigger because the Earth does not keep getting bigger. The biological analogy is a old growth forest. And an old growth forest is an amazing place. But it's not just defined by having giant trees in the forest. You have growth and decay in balance in the forest. You have the tall trees, you have the trees that have fallen on the ground that rot and create soil for the next generation of trees. So it's a dynamic place, even if the total size of the forest does not change. And a steady state economy, to be fair, does not exist anywhere in the world, and it would require a complete revamping of the monetary system in ways that would probably make all of us very uncomfortable and poorer in terms of the dollars that we actually have. But it would be more stable, it would be more fair, and it's the type of economy that a renewable energy system could actually provide, because to live on the solar budget that we get from the sun and the wind, which is a form of solar energy, you can harvest tremendous amounts of energy this way, but there's a limit. You can only use the amount that's created. I have a solar hot water system. It's great, at least for part of the year. But when it's finished heating up the water, that's it. In the winter, I have to cheat and use fossil fuels. But in the summer, I use solar energy to heat the water, and at the end of the day, it's usually hot enough for using. On a larger scale, the amount of solar energy that we're using every year via fossil fuels is about 1 million years of solar energy per year. And we're mining this, like a coal mine, which is a form of solar energy. And it was an incredible bounty of nature, but we blew through it really quickly. And now that we're entering the downslope, we are being forced to make changes whether we want to or not. And since, as a species, I guess we love procrastination, this is going to force us to reduce consumption whether we want to or not. And we can do it with anger, or we could think more intelligently about how to be more efficient in the way we're going to use the bounty of the Earth. As things get tighter financially, we need to resist the blame game, the temptation to pin it all on some others, because as societies encounter economic stress and collapse, they can get very violent. And there's many examples in history to show that, some in recent history. And that's probably my biggest concern, even more than the demise of the polar ice caps. Because that may happen whether we want it or not. A certain amount of that's going to be forced, even if we completely created Ecotopia tomorrow. But it's the social response to these messages and limits that determines how future generations of humans will be able to behave. That is as much of a consciousness shift as probably anything else.